Hello, and welcome to Queen City Profiles, a podcast brought to you by the Charlotte Mecklenburg Library. This is a show where we bring prominent members of the Charlotte community in for a conversation, hosted by library staff.
My name is Mercedes Walker, and I'm here today with Sierra Harris. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Sierra is a teen services specialist at the Teen Loft at Imagineon. For nearly a decade, Sierra Harris has worked diligently to find the spice of her community by creating outreach programs that focus on teens' direct needs. She is now pursuing an MLIS at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro while working at Imagineon, the Joe and Joan Martin Center. This year, she was named a YALSA Spectrum Scholar and was awarded the Carla Dupree Scholarship for her continued work with underprivileged groups. Sierra's career began at Richland County in Columbia, South Carolina, Richland County Library, that is. While working at Richland Library, she fell in love with programming and developed a strong passion for serving the at-risk community. Sierra currently works for Charlotte Mecklenburg Library as a teen services specialist, and her most notable program to date is her outreach book club that is currently being facilitated at numerous community sites in Charlotte, North Carolina. Unlike common book clubs, Sierra's Great Girlfriends Reading, Empowering, and Achieving Together literary group uses music, short stories, and poetry to improve the literacy and interpersonal skills of the youth. Using her own past experiences as a catalyst for the work that she does in the community, Sierra's motto is finding the purpose in your pain. It is her motivation to use her past trials to push the community forward. So, Sierra, what brought you to the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area?
I moved to Charlotte about 4 years ago. When I decided to make that move, I'm from a small town in South Carolina called Hopkins. It's very rare when you meet people in Charlotte who know where Hopkins is at. And I'm always like, that's my cousin, if they know where Hopkins is. But 4 years ago when I moved here, I always say my life was completely different. It was a dark space. I was around people who, in hindsight, didn't have my best interests at heart. Mm-hmm. I kind of dropped out of college at the University of South Carolina. And I just got to the point where my depression was just overcoming me to the point where I couldn't get out of bed because mm-hmm. I felt like it was crippling me. Mm-hmm. So after talking to my family and my spiritual leaders, it was kind of like, what are you going to do next? Are you going to sit here in this pain, or are you gonna make a move and start over? Mm-hmm. So moving to Charlotte was a fresh start for me. So I literally just decided one day, I'm moving. Mm-hmm. That's literally how it was. My lease was about to be up, and I was like, I can do it. This is the time where I can do it. So I started applying for jobs. I have some family in Charlotte, so I was like, this might be a good place. I'll still be around some of my family, but I'll be away from those negative influences.
Right.
And I moved here.
Good.
And it's been up ever since then.
Well, I often say that a lot of people end up in the library system by falling down the rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. Like many of us kind of fell into mm-hmm. the library. How exactly did you get into this system? How was that path for you?
The library, I started working as a shelver at mm-hmm. the Southeast Regional Library. That was my first job out of high school. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this will just be a little summer job. And then once I got into it, I became friends with the teen librarian. Mm-hmm. And she looked at me, even though I was just a shelver working 3-hour shifts, she was like, well, we work the same nights, so you can come to my programs. And then I started coming to her programs, then I started helping her with her programs. And 6 months in, I was leading programs still as a shelver. Mm-hmm. So I was like, if I can do this, this is where I need to be. South, that library is the library that I grew up going to. That's mm-hmm. my community library. The library my baby sister still goes to this day. So it was just that one opportunity as a shelver, thinking, oh, this is just a little fling of a job. And then I just continued to move up. I got a part-time position as, like, it would be the equivalent of a library assistant. Mm-hmm. So, like, a circulation assistant is what they call it there. And then I got a full-time job, my first full-time job, and now I'm here.
Wow. So would you say that when you came to Charlotte, you had in mind to work – in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Library.
Yes. I wanted to get at Imaginon, because that's the children's library that everybody talks about across the Southeast. So I was like, that's where I want to end up at. I could do great programs there. I was working with middle school age kids already for the 2 years before I moved here, solely with middle school age. And I knew if I could get in any library in Charlotte, then it would be Imaginon. My path didn't go that way originally. I started at Scaly Bark, which I feel like was a huge blessing because I got under management who helped me develop my skills and develop my programming, my outreach skills, taught me how to pitch a program idea, how to go for a grant, how to just take risk in a way that I wouldn't have been ready for if I came directly from the smaller libraries to Imaginon.
Absolutely.
So my path was different, but I got to where I wanted to be at eventually.
Well, tell us a little about the evolution of your programming, because I'm sure what you started out doing possibly in the small community that you grew up with in, and then Scaly Bark, and then finally Imaginon. How did that develop?
So I would say I've always been doing the same type of programs. All of our programs, I focus more on like social skills and pulling out meditation, anything that's going to pull out emotions and get people talking. We're going to start talking about our past experiences. I just wasn't ready for those type of programs.
Right.
Like, I didn't have the experiences that I needed to have to do the programs that I'm doing now. I was too, I wouldn't say I was too young, but I wasn't seasoned enough to be able to handle the heavy stuff that when you start digging into those deeper type of programs where you're talking about race and you're talking about healing and you're talking about the community, I wasn't ready for that then. So my programs then, even though I had the best intent, like it's literally the same structure of a program that I'm doing now. That's always been my goal, to pull out those programs that are going to pull on your heartstrings a little bit. But now it's totally different because I can understand what the community is going through. I've been through a lot of that same stuff.
Right.
So the impact I have is different now because I've been through it. And I use my platform to pull them out so that they know that they can make it through it too.
Well, along those lines, I know that you work with the Florence Crittenden Center.
Florence Crittenden Center. Yes.
Tell me about that organization, about the work you do there, and about the vision you have for going forward.
Florence Crittenden, I officially say, is like the love of my life. I love that place so much. It is a center that serves at-risk, or I like to call them opportunity youth, mostly young women who are either in foster care or who are in foster care but also are expecting. And they also take in expecting mothers who are adults and let them get their use their resources while they go through their pregnancy. It's an awesome space. I started doing my book club there. I had no idea how it was going to go because I had never worked with young women in foster care before. Sometimes they come into my group after immediately being pulled out of their homes or taken from their homes, which is hard. So I started, and it's crazy, I have to tell you my story about starting there. I started there as a volunteer because I volunteer a lot on outside of work. So I started working there as a babysitter.
Okay.
And it was through the orientation as a babysitter that they were talking about all these different programs that they do. Like, they have people come in and do creative journaling or vision boards or meditations. And I was like, wow, the library should be in here doing something like this. I didn't know at the time that the library had done outreach programs periodically there. So after talking to the coordinator, I was like, can I come back? And I was going on vacation. I remember vividly, I was going on vacation. I was like, can I come back tomorrow? I just got to catch a flight later that day. Can I come back tomorrow and pitch a program idea? Because I have this awesome idea that I'm trying to do at some middle schools and high schools in Charlotte, and I think your girls could benefit from it too. And I started off taking short stories, taking novels, taking poems, anything I could get my hands on and give to them. I was taking it, and I would just see how they would react to it. And I noticed over time they really enjoyed the poetry, things that we can read together in that moment, things, pieces of work that really resonate with them, that talk about hardships. They love stories of women who've overcome hardships. And you have to think, like, that's the kind of stuff that we read, too. That's the kind of stuff I read all the time. I love hearing the story of when somebody was down on their luck, but then they turned it into a great situation. So I focus more on that, like, how can we uplift them? What kind of conversations can we have that will bring them together? Not shying away from heavy conversations from, like, racial biases to police brutality to code switching. Using that platform and taking a poem, like, let me think of a poem. taking like Dr. Maya Angelou and Why the Caged Bird Sings and taking that poem and using that as a catalyst for them to go around and spark the conversation, mm-hmm. a spark of conversation has been awesome. So going forward, I just hope to continue to have those deep conversations. I won the Great Stories Club grant through ALA. So Charlotte McMurray Library was a pilot program for this earlier this year.
Okay.
And I was able to take resources and give them free books.
Okay.
So this summer we focused on, we went real heavy this summer. We read The Hate U Give.
Wow.
Yeah, and we had a lot of deep conversations from code switching to the use of the N-word mm-hmm. to so many things. To just like assimilating in a society that wasn't necessarily built for black women
mm-hmm.
or women of color, period. We also read March, and we read Miss Marvel. So we discussed our superpowers, and it's wild how you can take a piece of literature and break it down in a way so that they can understand it and resonate with the characters in a way that you typically wouldn't unless you break it down and you see them for who it is.
Mm-hmm. You said something earlier about instead of calling them at-risk kids, you like to call them opportunity mm-hmm. kids. Tell me more about that. How did you come about that, and how... what kind of opportunities have you been able to?
I noticed that when you call a child an at-risk child or when you give them that label, it kind of pulls out of one group. And I remember vividly having a conversation with one of my coordinators, like, I really want to see different groups of people in my clubs. I don't want it to all just be young black women. Of course, like, I love young black women. Mm-hmm. I'm a young black woman. But I want different groups because the conversations that we have in regards to race, I feel like could be beneficial if we have different groups
mm-hmm.
and that they come together so that they see themselves as one instead of being divided. So, but I feel like when you put that word, that little label, at risk, it kind of just pulls from people mm-hmm. just think poor or they think disenfranchised. But you can be at risk even if you come from a family that's well off, but you don't have the literacy skills that you need to go forward. That's
mm-hmm.
still putting you at risk to not being able to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
So when you change it and say that they're opportunity youth,
mm-hmm.
it's like they all have the same opportunities to go forward. They just need that extra push.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's like I have kids who are coming from homes that are disenfranchised, but I also have kids who are coming from really nice homes but just don't have those same reading levels that they need. And we're putting them together because they still have the same opportunities. They just need that extra push.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you mentioned that you read Miss Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
So ma'am, what is your superpower?
I was thinking about this question. I think it's really just how authentic I am with myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a friend with my flaws, and I love on my strengths, and I love on my flaws too because they make me who I am. And I think when you give yourself genuine love, then you don't have any other choice but to give other people genuine
mm-hmm.
love. And when you're pouring out genuine love, other people are attracted to you. And I think that's why I can be myself in any room and still be able to fit in
mm-hmm.
or feel comfortable because this is who I am. I have a checkered, trouble all over the place type past. But I have this awesome future going ahead of me, and
mm-hmm.
I don't try to discredit the things that I've been through just because they were hard. I love those things too because they brought me here. So I think when you're authentic and you love yourself genuinely, like you pour more love into yourself than you can pour into anybody else, then you have no other option but to give people genuine love, and that brings people to you.
So you said you've only been in Charlotte for 4 years,
mm-hmm.
and you said you had dropped out of college.
Mm-hmm.
So in those four years, you finished college,
uh-huh.
and you're in grad school, and you've won two very prestigious scholarships,
mm-hmm.
the Carla Dupree Scholarship, which is awarded by the library to a library employee,
mm-hmm.
and the Spectrum Scholarship. I need to know, how does one go from dropping out
mm-hmm.
of college to not only finishing college, starting in a career, starting graduate school, and winning two scholarships in 4 years? What was the catalyst for that? How did that happen?
One thing that really pushed me was a conversation I had with my baby sister. She's 13, so to her, she's the one. I feel like, of course, your whole family loves you unconditionally, but I know that my sister loves
mm-hmm.
me no matter what. And she told me one day, she was like, this is when I first moved here, so I had this job that I'm in now, And I was making it, but I wasn't, I feel like, at my fullest potential. Mm-hmm. And my sister was like, I'm just so proud of you. And I was like, girl, what are you proud of? Because I'm working, like, that's nothing to be proud of. And I was like, wow, she's really looking at the things that I'm doing. Like, I really need to set a standard for her. I need to, like, show her that your path might not be always straight, but mm-hmm. you can get to that same end goal if you're willing to put the work in. Mm-hmm. So the conversation, having her look at me so, like, modeling everything that I do, looking at me as if I'm a role model, and then going to a lot of therapy, that kind of gave me the push that I needed to get on the right path and actually put my goals right in front of me and not look at them like something like, oh, getting my undergrad, that'll never happen for me mm-hmm. because I stopped going mm-hmm. to class, or I was so distracted by other stuff, I didn't care anymore. Mm-hmm. No, you can still do that. You just have to be willing to put the work in. Then thinking, oh, graduate school? Wow, okay. All my friends that I grew up with, they already have masters. Some of them are like about to be doctors. And you're still sitting here twiddling your thumbs. It's like, no, if you're willing to put the work in, you can do it. Mm-hmm. It's just about taking care of yourself, one. Mm-hmm. Because 4 years ago, I was not taking care of myself. Mm-hmm. I was like my last priority. And then being willing to put that work in to get there. Like, I don't feel like there's anything that we can't get to if we're willing to put the work in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So what would you say is the most life-changing piece of advice you've ever received?
If you talk to me for more than 10 minutes, I will probably encourage you to go to therapy because it mm-hmm. changed my life. And my therapist, an awesome woman, she told me, she had me write out every good event that I could remember that happened in my life. So like an awesome birthday party I had as a child, to every negative event that or traumatic event that I could name in my life. And she's like, okay, you celebrate those happy moments. Like, you're excited to talk about those. But when it comes to the negative moments, you shy away from them. It's like, those moments they serve a purpose in your life. So mm-hmm. what is that purpose? Like, are you going to sit in that pain and just be like, oh, that happened to me, woe is me? Or are you going to find purpose in that pain? Mm-hmm. And I use that purpose, and I brought that into the work that I do in the library. And that's what's pushed me to be so dedicated to groups like Florence Crittenden. That's what continues to push me, because when you're dealing with depression, that's like an ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. You continuously have to work on yourself. You continuously have to pour into yourself, pour positivity and love into yourself. So when she instilled in me finding purpose in the pain that I went through, mm-hmm. I use that when I go to my groups. That's why I have such hard conversations sometimes, because mm-hmm. it's healing for me to be able to share my story of overcoming adversity to help another young woman. To mm-hmm. me, that's why I went through it, because I was put into a place and I was given a platform to where I could go in the community and touch another life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So finding that purpose in your pain is the best advice I ever got. Mm-hmm. It's the best advice I ever received.
What advice would you give to people who want to work with young adults?
It's just about finding what you're passionate about and being consistent mm-hmm. in what you're doing. When you are passionate about a program, about an initiative, when you're passionate about it, it'll shine through. And because you're so passionate about it, you'll attract other people to you. Mm-hmm. I think it's all about, in moments where you can be transparent and mm-hmm. be yourself fully, do that, because that'll attract people. Any time that you can be genuine, be as genuine. We should be genuine all the time, mm-hmm. in my opinion, but be as genuine as possible, because that's what's going to attract people. That's what's going to attract the numbers and make your program sustainable. Mm-hmm. It's all about being consistent, finding your passion, and letting your passion shine through no matter what they are, because there's always a space for it if you make one for it. Mm-hmm. And being genuine, being true to who you are, and letting that shine through your work.
Good. Well, as we close out our talk, I want you to tell me, where do you find your inspiration? It sounded like your little sister.
Yes, I find my inspiration in my sister, the people that I meet, the connections that I build in the community. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing when after I end the program. And we might have been crying in there. They mm-hmm. give me a hug. Mm-hmm. Or they tell me, I can't wait to see you next week. Mm-hmm. Or they get mad when I'm not coming next week. That, to me, shows that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. Or when people open up to me in ways without me asking questions. Mm-hmm. Or they seek my advice for things. that's where I find my inspiration. I think working in a group, and I was just talking about this yesterday, working in Florence Christensen sometimes is difficult because the young women transition out. While it's good that they transition to their own apartments or back home with their family, after a couple months, you start to build a bond with them, mm-hmm. get to know their kids. So you're looking for them. Mm-hmm. So when I hear from girls that I worked with 2 years ago, and they're like, Miss Sierra, I'm in college now, I'm doing this, mm-hmm. that inspires me to keep going because that's like, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. 4 years ago, I was all over the place, but everything happened the way it was supposed to happen mm-hmm. to bring me where I'm supposed to be.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Sierra.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your story with us. Thank you for sharing your light. Thank you for having the strength to do what you're doing to get where you are.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So this has been Queen City Profiles, and we appreciate you guys joining us today. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Queen City Profiles. To learn more about this or any of our other podcasts, visit our website, digitalbranch.cmlibrary.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CM Library or on Twitter @CM Library. We'll see you next time.